congratulate you, even though you couldn't get. Yes, we drag you through the muck, Your Honor. Wasn't it unkind? We learned more of your private life than of your legal mind. You never said a word to anyone about Roe v. Wade. Perhaps it was you were too busy trying to get laid. From humble start to highest court, undaunted you did travel. And all we ask is that you keep your hands upon that gavel. And when you render on our rights and rule on what's obscene, don't be keeping those late nights and keep your language clean. Justice Thomas, we will promise not to bring this up again. Now that you have been confirmed, put down that poison pen. You've passed the test, and now you'll slant the court for Georgie Porgy. But don't invite the other eight to watch a movie orgy. We'll forget what we heard. Can we count on your word? Do you promise, Justice Thomas?
That was our favorite, Mark Levy, Born to be Wired, Justice Thomas, Do You Promise? He, of course, is one of our end-of-the-millennium justices. Hopefully the millennium will see the end of him, at least as far as his justice career goes. Justice seems to be a strange way to describe what Clarence Thomas does. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and the call-in number here, should you choose to do so, is 427-3772. If you want to leave a message on the Free Radio Santa Cruz voicemail, it's 427-4523, and the email is frsc@cruzio.com. Snail mail is P.O. Box 7507-95061. Get all those numbers at the voicemail, 427-4523. But the most exciting would be if you called in here at the studio and got in touch with us at 427-3772 and let us know what you think. Free Radio Santa Cruz is desperately looking for a place to move to. We will be evicted in 3 weeks, and after that, you'll get to listen to KSCO. Think of that. Or possibly KUSP. So we do need help finding another place to get to. Otherwise, there will be radio silence and static where once there was the proud voices of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Keep that in mind. On May 22nd, we had this rather significant event that happened, and the News Review Board, as you've heard me say, is now going to investigate it independently. That is to say, they're going to hire a professional investigator to file a report. They're going to look at that report and the IA report, and then maybe, if they can find a majority to do so, and that's going to be questionable since the board is currently deadlocked 3-3, three of the new appointees and three of the old, and Cynthia Matthews still refusing to appoint her appointee, and her appointee will be a bad appointee, we can almost be sure. So it's really a kind of a deadlock situation on the board, although one can always hope for changes of heart. On May 22nd, however, and you heard us talking about it earlier in the show, there was essentially an assault on a group of protesters by the police department. in what they would describe, they described them as criminal charges against protesters. I would describe them as a form of harassment and abuse. And this is all going to be examined at the police review board processes over the summer. But before we get into that, here's a special interview with the woman who is perhaps at the center of a lot of this, a woman named Julianne. Julianne is a Canadian who was just traveling through, hadn't intended to be in a protest. That's why she brought her child along. It was expected to be a peaceful protest. They didn't expect the police to come running out of the side and drag people off and then start, pepper spraying one person in the mouth, as apparently Officer Lefebvre did to protesters Stephen Argue. Didn't expect her child to be torn away from her. Let's hear what she has to say. This is the first time that I'm aware of that this interview has ever been played, and it may be useful in the proceedings to come. It certainly was educational when I heard it. This is Julianne, the Canadian visitor, getting a ringside seat on how the Santa Cruz police treats its political protesters.
May 23rd, a Sunday evening, we're in the coffee roasting company. It's about 7:50. We're talking to
Julianne.
And Julianne, what's your full name? Where are you from?
I'm from Canada.
Where in Canada?
I was born in Ontario, but I've been in BC for the past 4 or 5 years.
And you came down to Santa Cruz, what, just recently?
We recently came from Maui. We're just traveling up north to BC. We're hitchhiking or finding rides up to Canada right now. We're just passing through Santa Cruz, and just yesterday we were here in Santa Cruz. Coming up from LA.
And you happened upon a protest yesterday in front of the, I guess on Front Street, in front of the Museum of Art and History, concerning the war in Yugoslavia.
Yep.
And how did you happen to find it? How did that happen?
A friend of ours that's very actively involved with the scene of what's happening here in Santa Cruz. He was here in Santa Cruz. A very good friend of ours wanted to go to the protest, and he came out with all the protests and scene.
What's his full name?
I don't know.
We'll get it for you.
Zarifi? Zarifi.
And so you went to the protest, and what, you were there with your companion and the two children?
Yeah.
And who, can you give us the names of all those people?
Both my companion Almond Rock, two children, Nenifa and Bianca Flower.
Can you spell their names?
A-R-O-W-E-R-H-A.
Is Almond the... And these are both your children?
These are both my children.
How old are they?
One's 2.5 and one's 5.
And... How long did the protest before something unusual began to happen?
Maybe 20 minutes.
And what did you observe happening up to that point?
Up to that point?
Yeah.
Everyone was just gathering and greeting people, and so we went up to the place of focus, which was to up the stairs to where people were having dinner with Sam Farr.
Farr.
And to expose, I was just basically watching what was going on. I know that there's bombing going on in Yugoslavia. I didn't know all the details. There was a boombox that was playing bombs to...
Like sounds of bombs?
Yeah. Playing. And it was quite loud, but I'm sure it wasn't like overly loud. It was really loud outside though.
And then did you see policemen take that boombox, or what happened there?
What happened that was starting to be like uh-oh was people started banging on the windows, and
the windows of.
I remember like the woman that was in charge, or of the catering or the dinner or whatever coming out and saying, asking to turn down the music or to turn down the noise. And we were, the people there were refusing to do that. And she went back inside. And then I remember standing there quietly, just watching other people, a few other people banging on the windows. And then people started yelling, like, just not that it was that threatening, but it was more that they were trying to get the people's attention inside, like, hey, you guys, wake up, there's bombing going on and you're associating yourselves with it. So then the police, I saw LeFevre was the one, as far as I remember, it was LeFevre.
Officer Dave LeFevre?
Yeah. Came up and grabbed the boombox, and another woman at the same time, happily, I think, what's her name? Not sure. She was... No? The other woman...
Shayna.
Yeah, Shayna was the one who grabbed the boombox, and she was, like, happily ready to take it away or turn it down. And he was not going to negotiate it. He was taking that boombox. That was it.
Did you hear him?
There was no warning whatsoever about the boombox.
How close were you to the scene?
I was right beside this guy, and she was on the other side of me.
This guy being Dave LeFevre, the police officer?
Uh-huh. And then I saw two... So he grabbed that. I don't know what happened to the boombox. I didn't see what happened there. Two other police, including LeFevre, grabbed the woman who was standing quietly beside me, Goling.
Asian American woman.
Yeah, she was totally quiet, a student. She had her backpack on. She was just looking in the window right beside me, making no noise whatsoever, no aggression at all. Like, there was no movement going on with her. She was just standing there looking in the window. And from behind, two cops grabbed her, and I watched them clip her arms together and not say a word to her. No one spoke to her.
Did they say you were under arrest?
No.
Now, would you have heard it with perhaps the noise of the crowd had drowned out that?
Maybe not, but then nobody was facing her. It was from behind.
So,
she
were you standing behind her or in front of her or next to her?
I was right beside her, and then they turned her, and her face was right. She was looking right into my face, and she didn't say anything, but the look was like, look what they're doing, like...
And did
she didn't protest or nothing.
How many police officers were involved in this arrest?
Three.
Do you know the names of the other officers?
No. And I think there might have been a woman there. I'm not sure.
What did you do after that?
And I followed them. I made a choice because I thought, part of me said, oh, we better just leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
And another part of me said, no, you saw that this is totally illegal for them to come up, take this passive person without warning, and arrest her. And I didn't, and the look in her eyes touched me really strongly that I couldn't just ignore. You know, it was like, I'm not going to ignore somebody being taken away like this. So I refused to ignore that, and I made a choice to follow them, and I was right beside them demanding that they tell me why they're arresting her. Why are you arresting her? Tell me why you're arresting her. I kept badgering them. I wasn't touching them. I was right beside them, though, right behind them. And then I decided that's it. They took her too quickly, of course. She was in the cop vehicle.
They took her down the steps of the Art History Museum to the street.
Them completely until
and
they...
And there was a van waiting there?
Yeah. And they put her in the back, and I couldn't get through the crowd of people fast enough to follow them, but I just decided, oh, I'm going to stand in front of this vehicle that, you know, with my child in my arms. First she was on my shoulder, and then she was in my arms.
Which child?
My five-year-old.
And her name?
Nenufar.
And you and Nenufar were standing there. Hey, Nenufar.
Yeah.
Hey, hey. You were there, and you were there too, weren't you? What's your name?
Uh-huh. Nenufar.
And then I thought you were with your mom here yesterday in front of a police paddy wagon?
Yeah.
And what did you think of all this that was going on?
I think it was bad that they did that.
What didn't you like about what they did?
That they almost put that girl in jail. But I don't know if they... She didn't get in jail. He only got in the truck.
Yeah, they put her in the truck, and actually they took her to jail, but then they released her, I think what they did soon after. But let's see what happened next. What happened next? Tell me what happened. You were in front of the van with a number of other people, right?
Yeah.
Trying to ask the officers what was the charge against
Goling.
Goling.
Yeah.
And
a lot of other people were surrounding the vehicle and refusing for them to be able to drive away with this woman. So a lot of the focus went away from the door and went all around the van. A lot of people were focused on the van. Some people did stay up on the steps, but I lost what was happening over there because I was right in front of the truck.
What did you observe before your interaction with Officer Lefebvre, which of course we're going to be coming to in a moment? What other things did you observe happening?
There was one person standing on my right, which was, as I questioned, was Jim.
Jim Costner?
Yeah. And then there was a few other people behind me, but there was a bunch of officers came towards the front of the vehicle to scoot people away. A lot of people went away, and
now, was the siren of the vehicle on at this point?
No.
Because I know at one point they turned on the siren and began going.
I don't remember that. That's not in my memory.
So what do you remember next that happened?
I remember them taking Jim. And I didn't know that they actually took him into the vehicle. I thought they just took him away to the sidewalk or something.
Is this in back of the vehicle or in front of the vehicle?
This is in front of the vehicle. And then I was like the only person in front of the vehicle, like directly in front of the vehicle. And there was nobody standing close to me after Jim. And
Is this Jim, the fellow who linked arms with you at one point, or?
No, we didn't link any arms.
But in the videotape, there's a picture of somebody linking arms with you as Officer Lefebvre is giving you a pain compliance hold on your wrist. Somebody is.
He
armed
him around the trial, actually.
You know,
that might have happened. I did not link arms with anybody, though.
Yeah. Okay, so what
happened? But I did feel like people.
So Officer Lefebvre then came up to you, and did he say something to you? Or?
He was telling me to move. He's just saying, like, move. And I continued to say, I want to know what happened to that girl. I want to know why she's arrested. You can't just take her away like that. I said, you have to tell me why she's arrested. He grabbed my fingers, and he squeezed them. And I took my fingers out of his grasp. I put my hand firmly, not pushing, but firmly put it on his arm and said, you have to tell me why she's arrested. And then that's when he tried to grab my arm again, and I pulled my arm away again, and I screamed it louder, tell me why she's arrested so I don't get arrested. I want to know what the heck is going on here. Why are you arresting people unjustly? I just kept demanding that he tell me
now,
why.
Was there a female sergeant who said something to you, like, go to the sidewalk and then they'll tell you?
Well, he grabbed my hand again. What happened there, as soon as I did put my hand firmly on his arm, he grabbed my hand and my wrist in one of his hands and squeezed my hand to my wrist so that it was cutting off my wrist circulation. It was very painful. He was squeezing my hand really hard. And I had my other five-year-old in my arm. Totally felt strong. I wasn't budging. And he was calling assault. He was saying, assault, assault, and three more officers came over, including this red-haired woman with braces.
That's Sergeant McMahon.
Okay. Now, she was right in my face saying, she was trying to talk to me, but I was saying, tell me why she was arrested. Why was she arrested? And I was not letting her talk, but she said, go to the sidewalk and I'll tell you. And I wasn't moving, and three officers were pushing me, and Lefebvre was pulling me.
Mm-hmm.
With my
opposite direction,
Lefebvre was pulling me towards the back of the paddy wagon, and three cops were pushing me to the sidewalk. I didn't feel that. My daughter says her leg was hurt during that time.
Do you remember this?
Yeah.
What do you remember about it?
I fell on one of those where those trees are in town. I tripped on the cement around it, and then I was walking there, and then there, the cops squeezed my leg where I got it hurt.
Wow, and that must have hurt?
Uh-huh.
Did you tell the policeman that hurt?
No.
No, but it did hurt, huh?
Yeah.
Did you cry out?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would cry out too if my leg was hurt and someone was squeezing me. No question. What's your name?
Manisha.
Okay. So, there were the police, Officer Lefebvre was trying to pull you toward the paddle wagon. Three other police officers were pushing you toward the sidewalk and I guess the other direction.
They're clearly confused as to what they're doing because he's calling arrest, he's arresting me, he wants all the cops there to take me to the paddy wagon. They're pushing me to the sidewalk because they're confused, I think, because I have a child. They don't want to arrest me. That's a big deal. And I think they're all confused. That's what the feeling was. I turn around, my partner, my companion, Almond, was right there, like, trying to see what the heck is going on because I'm screaming in pain. And he has my other daughter on his shoulders, my 2-year-old, and I saw police trying to get her, or trying to pull him and push him around, and he's just like, they were fumbling. They were so fumbling anyways. They were not clear about what they were doing because of the children. I think it scared them too, what they were doing. But Lefebvre definitely was not that scared of nothing. He did hurt. He was like, I have an opportunity to hurt you and call this on you. This power trip, like, you're going to talk to me like that. Well, I'm going to call assault on you. And it was like, don't question the police or you get...
He was accusing you of assaulting him.
Yeah, because I put my hand firmly on him after him squishing my fingers and said, you've got to tell me. And that's when he grabbed my hand, my wrist, and said, you're under arrest, assault, and squished my hand.
It's saying he would say assault because, see, assault means putting an officer in fear of his safety.
Yeah.
Battery is unlawful touching, so you might have been, you're engaging in a battery, perhaps, but not an assault. But he used the word assault.
Assault, for sure, he was calling
back it. Back to the library for Officer Lefebvre. So, what happened then?
Okay, and so eventually the three cops, they're distracted with other people. I'm pulled by Lefebvre still. Every time I scream, he's squeezing my wrist harder and looking in my face like, shut up. He didn't say shut up. It was just like you want this to really hurt? You know, I felt like if I scream, I'm going to get hurt more. But I continued to scream, he's hurting me, he's hurting me, he's hurting me, he's hurting me.
And were there other people around at this
yeah.
point?
Now we got pulled, there wasn't many people around. I noticed, I don't know what happened with my partner. I was a little bit like, whoa, I don't know what's going to happen there. I wasn't around him anymore, but I was pulled around to the back. And there was a woman there, which I think was her. Were you standing beside Steve? Were you standing beside Steve? Or there was, maybe that other woman, like I know there was a gray-haired
maybe Lydia?
The other woman that was here tonight too?
She was taking notes and talking about different organizational things at the meeting today.
Oh, and I do remember also Tracy. I remember being at the front of the paddy wagon and Tracy yelling at the cop in the front and like her banging on the window and yelling right into the window, like being pretty vicious about it. Yeah.
I have the video camera.
Yeah.
So,
anyways, we're back around the...
Okay, a quick interruption here.
Even all the people were saying, let her go.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw Steve's face. He was in the back of the paddy wagon just looking into it. Like, I think he's looking at Berlin or making sure that what was happening there was...
So were you still being held by the police officer?
I was still being held, and Steve saw the pain of my wrist. He looked at my wrist, and he looked in, and he was like, looked at the child, and looked at my face, and was like, you can't do that, man. He was like yelling at the police, like, you can't do this. And the police were, Lefebvre. Yeah, he was totally ignoring that guy, and looking me in the face, and trying to get me over to the paddy wagon, he was trying to get help. He was trying to get me arrested, linked in a somehow. And what happened is Steve I did not see Steve punch him at all, and I saw LeFevre's face was in my face.
Right.
I saw Steve hit LeFevre in the shoulder, like, kind of like firmly, like, moving him away, like, hey, like, listen to me. You can't, like, don't do that. You're hurting her. He kept saying, you're hurting her. I'm trying to wake LeFevre out of this, like, hurting me, yeah. And then as soon as Steve hit LeFevre on the shoulder, LeFevre just was like, ah, great, a release, a male. But it just felt like he wanted to hurt me because it was ticking him off. That's what I felt. But because I'm a woman, I have a child, that would have looked really bad on him. You know, he couldn't do anything about his anger. As soon as he was pushed, he just broke loose, let go, totally forgot of what was happening with me, and ran after Steve and tried to grab him and tried to do something. But
you saw what he was doing?
No. I did see him grab for Steve. Steve was too fast. And he ran after Steve just like vicious, like it was vicious. And my child was telling me, let's get out of here, get Almond, get Bianca, let's get out of this area. And we did exactly what she said. I saw Almond and saw Bianca. Because I heard later that a friend, Nassim, was defending Almond over there.
He was. I saw it. I was right next to
him. Yeah. And then the focus went on Nassim, and Almond was free. And both me and Almond and the kids were free. And all we did was walk right out of there, and nobody saw it. Like, barely anyone saw us leave. And all we did was just leave. And I wanted to file a report to police or something, but then I thought, oh, they might just twist it around. Because my hand was, you could see right here, it was red.
You're pointing to your right hand?
Yeah, it was cut off, like, the circulation was cut off right where the pulse is.
Right.
It was red. It's like total crease, like a very fine line. And right here you could see his fingerprints for like a good hour. My hand was totally sore. My arm was really sore, and it's fine now. I did a lot of release on my arm. It's fine now.
How long are you going to be in town?
Not very long.
Maybe 24 hours?
Yeah, we're looking for our next ride up north, so we weren't planning on staying here very long at all. But we'll see, because this is Steve.
She wants to sit on your
Steve is now in danger of being in jail and being charged a lot of money, a lot of time. And I feel like if I can help at all, and if that means I have to stay, that's worth a few days of staying than just taking off and him being left behind with jail sentence for a long time. So it's worth my time. I feel like I'm willing to do all I can to make sure that he gets what he needs, because he did it out of protecting me. Trying to wake a cop up out of being violent towards a woman.
How do you feel if we play this on the radio?
Excellent.
Thank you. Anything you want to add to this?
No.
What's gotten into our men in blue that's making them overreact? Is there something about wearing that badge that they do that makes them just want to attack? Or could it be rookies who prove overzealous? Perhaps we should ask, why this rough stuff now, fellas? We're hopped up cops at the donut shops, drinking hot coffee and soda pops, watching for motorists running stops so we can go practice karate chops. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine. If we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean. It's the LAPD theme. Up against the car, did you hear what I said? Hands in the air or I'll smash your head. You better get on the ground or you'll wind up dead. You're gonna be sorry you ever spent coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine. If we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean. It's the LAPD theme. bet your bottom dollar on the donuts I've eaten that your black butt is gonna get a beating. So go ahead, sue, if you think we're mistreating, and we'll take it up at the next plant meeting. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine. If we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean. It's the LAPD theme. Up against the car, did you hear what I said? Hands in the air or I'll smash your head. You better get on the ground or you'll wind up dead. You're gonna be sorry you ever sped. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine. If we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean. It's the LAPD theme. Criminal slime, cause we're on the prowl, getting tough on crime. Get your cameras ready, get your lights online, cause we're all pumped up for prime time. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine. If we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean. It's the LAPD theme. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine. If we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean. It's the LAPD theme. It's the LAPD theme. It's the LAPD theme.
That's the LAPD theme from Mark Levy, Born to be Wired. And we have that wiry guy with us on the phone now, that man about the city council, the infamous Phil Bear. Hi, Phil.
Hi. Network.
And this is the Psychiatric Psychotic Network, yes.
Can I speak with Diana Warwick, please?
Hang on a second. I'll see if I can find her. She's singing in the next room.
I'm wondering what my future holds.
You are, of course, your own network. In essence, you've been fighting for many moons to secure some kind of, well, services from the city and to make sure that the city doesn't bulldoze the beach flats and everybody succeeded. And after the last election, then you found yourself in front of this New Mercy housing project, the Dolphin Lee plan to supposedly put in affordable housing. We've talked about that. We've discussed how the proposal that you and Jane, I guess some other folks in the beach flats, put forward, the Rex Court proposal, actually is, to my mind, a superior alternative. It talks about not destroying existing housing, but actually renovating more housing and keeping what we have down here. What's happening around city council and the inner scans and intersection network circles? Is there still a plan to talk about the Dolphin Lee project and push it through? Is there a plan to do the Bahia Hotel development? What do you see?
Well, we might very well be the last. No, we're not on the invited list. We only can speak to what we hear. I'd like to think that we raise doubts about that particular Dolphin Lee plan. And, I would like to think that we made these folks aware of the larger problem of Seaside Company by vacate and demolish policy that has eliminated a sizable chunk of the neighborhood in the last 20 years or so, a problem which we, living right in the midst of, have always sort of assumed everybody knew about, but we finally got around to pointing it out. Years ago, no longer exists because of that.
Correction Board seemed to be on the verge of actually passing such a resolution and making some votes to do that at the next board meeting. And you're a member of that Community Action Board. Is that likely to happen?
I think so. We need to work up the specific wording on it, but I think there is the recognition that it's a very significant problem that affects, of course, low-income people most dramatically, and that's Community Action Board thrust, so I think they're recognizing that it's very germane to their concerns.
You also talked to me earlier about the, I guess, sort of the changing fortunes of the Dolphin D project, given the fact that there was, I guess, some strange revelations with the city council meeting about whether they could actually fund folks who are currently living there, and something about legal requirements. Any details on that?
Yes. In 1996, as part of Slick Willie's Welfare Reform Act, there was a revision and a tightening of restrictions regarding the use of public money to provide or subsidize housing for non-citizens. They made it, they absolutely prohibited it. In no uncertain terms, any money coming from either the state housing and community development department or the federal housing and urban development department, any of that money cannot go to provide housing assistance for non-citizens. As of 1996, and so
people are non-citizens.
Yes, a sizable number of them are non-citizens. The developer is acting as if they can simply ignore these HUD regulations, but then the wording in the regulations themselves is not only prohibitive, but that is to say the developer would be jeopardizing their funding, the bulk of their project, of course, in public housing development. So violate that requirement would be to jeopardize their own access to that source of money, and they're not about to do that. They're simply acting as if they're about to do that by way of gaining acceptance of the plan, and then I'm sure that once the plan is accepted, they'll find some other reason why those people somehow don't qualify for relocation assistance or replacement housing. But the underlying reality will be that they are not qualified because of this HUD restriction, and they're just simply not being straightforward with regard to how this would actually impact these people who would lose their housing.
I kind of have a colloquy with Mike Rodkin on this issue. He made some surprising comments. Is that something you want to go into here quickly?
Well, his point was that there were non-citizens involved in living in other publicly funded housing projects, which may or may not be true. We've not been too awfully interested in that personally, and it seems to be rather difficult information to obtain, so I really can't confirm or deny it. The point I wanted to make is that if that is true, that in fact these housing projects in F number or some non-citizens, it could be legal because the projects were built prior to this 1996 revision of the restrictions, so that they could live in those projects, but with a new project for which they haven't obtained any of the funding whatsoever thus far, would be directly subject to these regulations, and so they would not be able to provide housing for these free people.
Well, you didn't make it to the SCAN conference in Rio College last weekend.
No, I missed a lot.
I did, however, talk the next day to a number of Discord disgruntled countries wanted to put together their own conference about underrepresented people and community constituencies, have their own workshop, sort of an alternate scan, if you will, in terms of people getting together and really doing activist work and not simply bowing, scraping, and bending over from politicians that are dearest. And I'm begging them, oh, please pay some attention to our scan priorities as they proceed to pretty much ignore them, do what they want to do. This is supposed to be on August 8th, and it's being sort of an announcement for you and for anyone else listening. August 8th, Jennifer just called in to announce it to me. And for those who are interested in getting in touch with her, I'm hoping that you and the Beach Area Working Group, or perhaps the Beach Flats Residents Association,
Neighborhood Association,
thank you. We'll be interested in that. Her number is 420-1253 for any neighborhood groups out there who actually want to start doing some activism work on getting real low-income housing. I guess Bob Lamonica goes up to the rent stabilization board as a landlord. I think what your position is on top of the bill, and it's time to ask you or not. Issues
are you asking me if it's time to ask?
Is it time to ask you? I don't know.
Thinking to yourself.
I'm sort of
the time.
I'm playing with myself, so to speak.
Well, what the hell?
Yeah, that's
it. That's the elevator.
I'm the same as when they smashed the state, but not quite that might mean. So, what do you think about the rent stabilization?
I haven't read it. I don't know. I certainly acknowledge the overriding price, problem of the skyrocketing cost of housing. Non-availability of housing in the town, so I understand what he's trying to accomplish there, but I know that those things can be, some work and some don't, and there are a number of details involved about which I am ignorant, so I really can't comment at this point.
Well, I know those issues will be coming up at this August 8th conference, and I invite anyone listening if they want more information about the alternate. Call 420-1253. We're talking to Phil Baer, community activist. Phil, you also have been active on other issues, specifically around stopping the screwing of uranium depleted ordnance around Yugoslavia and colorful but legal cluster bombs, which I guess are now...
they are pretty, you gotta say that.
They are, yeah, they certainly have a kind of bright quality to them.
Yeah.
Very explosive as well. Bright, flashy thing.
It'd be nice to have some on this particular day to celebrate our.
That's the right place to provide even greater independence. That would be important.
That's
right. Yes. You were at the May 22nd protest. You just heard us play a half hour tape with Julianne. David LeFevre, in essence, assaulted by the perspective of many. Any comments on that tape?
Well, I thought that her recollections were accurate. And she did not engage in a lot of hyperbole and thought something of the flavor of the thing. I agree, in essence, with her interpretation of excessiveness of the police provocation and all of the ensuing chaos being sort of a consequence of initial police misbehavior.
You were also at the Monday night Civil Citizens Review Board vote where they actually changed and decided to vote 5-1 to hire an investigator to seek that authority. City manager presumably would be granted. Any comments on that meeting and that process?
Well, I thought it was a good meeting. I was glad to see a couple of the board members, I don't know whether it would be fair to say that they changed their minds, but they finally put that board into gear and they've got themselves an investigation going for, as I understand, it's the first time in the board's, what, 6-year history?
That's my understanding.
So, finally the board is doing what the board was there to do. I'm sure there again there are a trillion crucial details like who this investigator will be, how the investigator will be chosen, the public nature of the process versus behind closed doors, etc. But at least the door is open for the time being.
Yeah, we, of course, I guess we're pleased that there actually is an investigation. Though some of us were kind of hoping that Lisa Rhodes would hold the line as the police review board member who has never in her life voted for an investigation and is very articulate and kind of holds the gavel in a firm grip. And she was the board chair, and she has been leading the other two members from 3-3 stalemate. In fact, I think once the Matthews appoints her fourth member, she Rhodes will be the controlling person again in that situation. Or it could be wrong. It would be nice to see some people in effect. Some of us were hoping that Rhodes would hold tough and insist on no investigation, at which point we could ask the city council to throw her out with much more justification. But she made the smart move, and if I were her, slip past. Of course, when the investigation comes down, she can essentially vote to ignore it.
Yes.
Once it's presented to her, she doesn't have to accept it. But it will be available presumably as a public document of that, just like the situation with the Happy John Dine investigation, where we didn't get an independent investigation. At least we got, thanks to Mayor City Scott, a copy of the DA's investigation in the public library. Then something will remain for people to look at in the years to come and decide what actually happened. Luckily, the situation is killed.
No, but one person is facing some serious prison time.
That's correct. Steve Argan faces up to 4 years in prison and how it has gone.
Yes. A very intelligent, non-violent young man who should not do independent for the next several years of his life. The community really needs people with his integrity and commitment.
And do you have any announcements of films you're going to make about the next week or two stuff coming up we didn't know about? I noticed there are no, according to the Sentinel, that's always problematic, but according to the Sentinel, there is no person in the council meeting because it's the second.
I don't know. I'm sure there are. I'm just unaware of it. There's always a gross vacuum of non-public involvement. Generally supportive of anybody doing damn near anything.
I know the budget hearings are coming up again. The final budget decisions will be supposed to begin. And everything at once pretty much on silver platter. Social services.
Yes.
Social services get 1%. Parks and Rec and almost goes over 50% of the
yes.
That's what we have to contend with, and that's what we're going to be changing. If we only had three council members, the new three would be willing to stand up and assert themselves rather than bow down to what they see as their foreign vote and their leader, Catherine Byers. You may remember when in the sense of this review board, he was claimed by the one opposition speaker that the other speakers who asked her to defend this position, a man named Ken, that turned out to be Lisa Rhodes' husband, said that they didn't really need an independent investigation. They should check on the IA first.
They are right.
Investigation with the police department. We countered he did a 17-minute speech, and he had the longest speech of all of us. But perhaps that's not entirely unfair. They're invited to call in and talk on Free Radio Santa Cruz. I also want to thank Ken for mentioning my name. I think it was 28 times since the president was the number of times my name had ever.
A legend in his mind.
And I am a legend. I want to thank you, Phil Bear. Are you still working on the direct support project? Are you still planning a massive march on City Hall?
Oh, yes. Right.
How could
we're planning on you having a massive march.
Don't plan too hard on that one.
We're the humble minions.
No, that's true.
You're our fearless leader.
I am the fearless leader. Is there a number people can get in touch with you if they want more information about that?
423-0170.
Checking up on the budget hearing, which very few people have done, have gotten in by. The people hearings are the people actually discuss and ultimately decide where the money goes. If there is the key issue, right?
Of course, yeah. What happens to the money over the course of the year is the big deal.
How much money are we talking about for this?
Well, the general fund, which is the money that they can actually spend, because there's other parts of the budget where they have no discretion. It's like there's federal or state money that they have to spend on a certain dedicated project, and they can't spend it any other way. But the general fund is $40 million.
Now, $40 million, how does that usually get divided up in terms of like different police circus services? What's the kind of the plan?
Well, the police get a third of it, and then the rest of the city, the parks gets the next biggest chunk, which I think is 15% or something. And the planning gets like 13-14%.
What about all those, you know, services for the homeless, services for the poor, services for renters, services for the elderly, services for disabled?
Well, actually we're doing a lot better than the federal government. The federal government is 1% of the budget to social services, and here in Santa Cruz we give 2%.
2%?
So we're doing twice as good as the federal government.
Other cities are also.
Well, here in Santa Cruz County, we're the only city that does things on this sort of level, like Capitola spends something like $100,000 on senior services or something. But they don't spend anywhere near what Santa Cruz does.
In terms of percentage?
Yeah. the same. Capitola's got a much greater general fund than Santa Cruz also.
Yeah.
Because they're much larger tax base, having 40%
of it. They're about 1/5 the size.
And they also have all of Santa Cruz car lots that Charlie Canfield is using away and put over there at 41st Avenue.
Huh. Charlie Canfield.
Well, he owns the 41st Avenue. He covers the big mega lot there.
Yeah, Charlie Canfield of the Seaside Company.
Yeah. He's one of the partners in building that auto mall there at the end of 41st.
Well, you have been to a number of these budget hearings. I think you mentioned that one, we have a new city council that did this last fall, sort of on some reaction against Charlie Canfield's plan to expand to the third rail line and so forth. And a couple of these councilmembers were concerned about the base budget.
Yeah, there was a lot of concern over the amount that the police are asking for, and that it seems like it's almost automatic. You know, there's no real, I mean, they discussed it, but it seemed like they were wondering why it's just sort of this rote process, and they were concerned about, you know, some of the funding that the police have, and the ongoing cost, where there's the police get grants to hire new officers, federal grants.
They're $12 million.
And the police budget this year is over $13 million.
And the police station itself has cost a total of $13 million, and it's over.
Right, yeah. It was first started out as a $7 million project, so it was on the drawing board, and it's spiraled out off almost double that time.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I'm sure it will reach the doubling point by the time it's finished and outfitted.
That's the target, right?
Yeah. Well, I think actually, if you wanted to include the $750,000 that we gave the police today, that would probably put us right in there at the $14 million mark.
So, was the council member Sugar and Phone were concerned about the police budget, or was it Michael Hernandez who spoke up?
Well, Michael Hernandez actually, on the police budget, was very vehement that pepper spray is not a lethal weapon.
Did he offer to demonstrate this by spraying himself?
No, but Steve already did suggest that to the audience.
I see.
And because there was a number of people there commenting, a couple of people commenting on pepper spray. And so Hernandez thought it was a good opportunity to
support the position of the police department, which I suppose, although they haven't had an official position of Alberto, that's his position?
I guess to officially support the police department, no matter how far it straight into the
police state realms?
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. Was the police department, was there any ceiling put on the police budget? I mean, did it seem that there were things cut out of the budget or questioned in the budget or transferred to social service?
There wasn't anything taken away from them. There was questions about certain things. They wanted, there was a big question about this $270,000 for furniture and equipment as part of the budget.
And I pulled out the agenda back in December.
Well, this was another, this was another
$270,000.
Right.
Ah, man, that's a pretty
question. They wanted to know about that, because I suggested maybe the police department could get their furniture over 10 years. And we get $27,000 this year instead of $270,000.
Did that pass semester by the buyer's majority?
No, well, what happened is the police commissioner, she said that it wasn't for furniture, it was for equipment. So having those furniture and equipment, and this was almost all
in addition to the $700,000 that it cost me today?
Yeah. So
the bucks just keep rolling in for Vulture's blue shirts, I must say.
Yeah, pretty incredible. But one of the items that was on the police budget was, I think, about $40,000 for training. And one of my comments was that I would hope that this training was used to train the police in non-lethal forms of
law enforcement?
Law enforcement, and also on appropriate response training. So if they were appropriate...
break down the door of a Button Street person and and shoot him 4 times in the back and hip and shoulder after having shoved his wife down to protect the wife, of course. That perhaps would use a more moderate approach.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, even like this protest on the 22nd, the police could have ended up and talked to people before they started pushing them around.
They might be showing weakness, I think.
Instead of doing a SWAT team tactic attack.
But you have to practice the tactic somewhere, Scott, for heaven's sake.
Well, I could do it over in your house, Robert.
There's a large backyard.
And nightly roused at your place would be really fun for that.
Use a pepper spray.
Yeah, I'm thinking of sleeping pepper spray.
Well, the police were at one hearing and you said that there were no substantive reductions, and I guess the final decisions are made in the police budget, or is that yet to come up?
No, the final decisions are made in July when they have their final vote on all the budget items. So
are substantive decisions really being made now, though? What's it feel?
Well, I think, you know, people are jostling now, and I mean, to me it didn't sound like anybody, except last night Chris Crow did say, you know, like, if we took 1% out of the police budget, then we could add 10% to the social services budget. That 1% would equal 10% of the social services.
At least something more than 30%.
Yeah, but it would be quite a boost to our social services.
Which Catherine Byers immediately demanded a report from the city manager on that possibility, right?
No, she said that she wanted the social, the motion of the put forward is that the social services would be checked out again sometime in January, the year 2000. If they needed any more money, the city would probably...